You say you took three hits. One was in the wing, one was in the fuselage, one was in the engine. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which engine was it? The right one or the left one?
It was the right engine, and the left landing gear sort of dropped right out of the mm-hmm. airplane. I couldn't see the front one, but I could hear the hit. Mm-hmm. And there were three people in the front, and they were all, I'm sure, killed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
They had no chance at all.
Now, were you familiar with these guys that you were flying with in this aircraft at the time? Did you make friends with them?
Yes.
You had enough time to make friends with them?
Reasonably well, but I tell you the truth, I can't even remember their names now. I've got it written down someplace.
Mm-hmm.
See, the other two that bailed out with me, we all ended up in the same permanent German prisoner of war camp
mm-hmm.
up in East Prussia.
Had you guys bombed your target at
yes,
that time?
Yes, we had just
turned around.
We had just dropped our bombs before we had a chance to
mm-hmm.
turn around. We were hit.
You say you were on 50 missions. All that time, you were on the various missions. Were you ever hit by other aircraft or enemy fire at any?
Well, we've been damaged a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with, in fact, the week before that, I was on that raid on the monastery at the casino. He was probably
mm-hmm.
Remember that. And we lost an engine and was damaged extensively on that one. We were lucky to get back from that. But we, the flights that I was on, we didn't. Other than that one, we didn't have any real significant damage. You know,
mm-hmm.
small things, holes.
Now you say you were shot over or after you made your drop at at Enzio, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And as you turn around, you were hit by 88s. Where did you guys bail out over then? Do you remember?
Yes, it was right over the front line. By the time we got out, we were. Over the front lines of the German line in the beachhead. And I had a little trouble when I bailed out. My flying boot caught on the plane and I sort of dangled from the plane for a little bit, and then my chute opened and sort of knocked me unconscious. And when I woke up, I was coming down into a brand new vineyard with
mm-hmm.
those stakes. You know how they
oh,
the
yeah.
thing. Oh boy, here it goes. You know, but fortunately, I didn't hit one of them. I
mm-hmm.
landed in the dirt, and I was in the process of gathering up my chute and starting to run. I saw some natives there, and they kept, you know, they were waving me to come on. And but by the time I got the chute and started to run towards them, you know, Germans were coming from all directions. So
mm-hmm.
it was right in the front line troops.
I see. Were the other guys in your plane in it captured as well, about the same time?
Yes, same time. There was one of the fellows was with me most of the time. The other one, he was captured, but they sort of used him as to show off. They said, he told me later that they paraded him around the streets of Rome.
Of Rome,
to,
right?
Yeah,
yeah,
to show him off, you know, American airman. So ultimately, though, he and I and the other fellow, we all ended up in the same camp
mm-hmm.
in Germany.
What German? What German outfit captured you? Do you remember?
Well, it was the infantry. It was right in the front line troops.
Okay.
There were tanks
mm-hmm.
right there. In fact, I hurt my knee and skinned my leg when I jumped out. And I was another kid. They assigned a kid to walk me down the street to an old house where they held me for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way, and I'll never forget this. On the way, we passed a tank, And this young tank commander called this private over that was taking me, and he went back in the tank, came out with his first aid kit, and put some stuff on my my leg. Yeah, yeah. And that's the only treatment I ever got.
From some of that.
So then he marched me to an old house, and then later that day, they took me to a place where they were holding all the Allied prisoners, and happened to be a big sound stage. It was in the southern part, south of Rome. It's what they call the Hollywood of Italy. They had these big sound stages, and they had us prisoners in there. There were a bunch of them. Primarily army, because they were having such a hard time at the beachhead at that time, and the Germans had captured quite a number of prisoners, plus airmen. So we were there for, I don't know, a few days, I guess. And then they put us on trains and sent us up through Italy to Germany.
So we traveled by train up to the northern part of Italy and into Germany. We were about from
through
Germany.
The Khyber Pass.
Oh, you went through the Khyber Pass.
And to Munich, to a transit camp.
To Munich, did you say?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And what was the
it's
name?
It's a transit.
Oh, transit camp.
Camp. Yeah.
Okay.
And then from there we were put on trains and were sent up to East Prussia, up to northern, well, be northeast Germany, I guess, East Prussia, near the Lithuanian border on the Baltic Sea.
What was the name of the Stalag that you...
Stalag Luft 6, and it was called Kiefheiden, but you're going to ask me how to spell it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can find it here.
Stalag Luft 6.
Stalag Luft 6.
During this time, friend, did anybody interview you or interrogate you at this time?
They did it. In that sound stage in Italy, Rome? They had... Mm-hmm.
How was their English at the time?
Very well. He'd been to... he was an officer, had been to America.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the things that he asked you to do, remember?
Well, he asked about your outfit, you know, how many planes were this and that. He didn't... they didn't pressure. You just told him, you know, you couldn't say anything and they didn't, he didn't press it because he knew everything anyway. So.
Mm-hmm. Did he have any groups, did he have any notebooks or anything of that nature that had all the information that he needed to know about your bomb group anyway? Some guys were telling me that they would pull out notebooks and say, well, look, you don't have to tell me anything, I'm going to tell you, and they would tell them all about him. Did he do that at all?
I don't recall him having any books at all. Okay. He was just really chatting with me.
Was that the first and last time that you were?
That's
in?
The only time I was ever
interrogated.
Mm-hmm.
How big a camp was the Stalag Luft 6 now?
About 10,000.
10,000.
Yeah.
People.
Now these were all non-commissioned Air Force. And there were some English and some Canadians, mm-hmm. and some New Zealanders, but they were all non-commissioned Air
okay.
Force. They had you separated.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The Air Force were separate camps, but they had separate camps for the officers and separate camps for the enlisted
non-coms. I see. What was Stalag Leaf 6 like? What did you do from the time you got up in the morning to the time you went to bed at night? What was the barracks like to sleep in? How many men were there in the barracks and things of that nature?
Okay. The camps were big wire enclosed places, and they had divided those. If I remember right, there were four separate enclosures in the main camp.
Mm-hmm.
And inside of each of these enclosures, they would have a series of barracks, would have a row on one side and a row on the other side, and in between would be just open spaces for you could play ball or mm-hmm. whatever. The barracks were just plain rectangular buildings with a center hall and small rooms on either side.
What were the small rooms for?
The small rooms were where they would have in a room a table, a stove, a coal or wood-burning stove,
mm-hmm.
and then they would have either three or four tiers of bunks on three sides of the room, and you would have anywhere from 12 to 16 people in a room.
And how big were the rooms now?
The rooms were probably about as big as this living room here.
And that's about how long?
No,
about 20 by 14.
Maybe.
Okay, and you had 16 guys in a 20 by 14 room.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, man. But they three to a bunk?
Three or four
mm-hmm. tiers to a chain.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Mm-hmm.
What a poor guy that had to climb four bunks up, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was there a pot belly stove in the center of the room or something?
No, it was on one side of the room.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Most of the rooms are that way.
Now, were the barracks themselves, were they off the ground?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they were on pillars?
On little pillars of
okay.
some kind.
Did they allow the dogs to run loose at night? Did they have dogs?
They had dogs. The dogs, we call them ferrets, they patrolled the compounds with the dogs at night.
Mm-hmm.
They were continually walking around.
And these were the guys that would check underneath the barracks naturally to see if there's any tunnel.
We'd be locked in, and you had to,
mm-hmm.
they had the outside shutters. They were closed on your window. You'd have one window in the room. So the windows and doors were locked shut.
One guy told me that, he said when you were outside, you can walk around and talk to anybody you wanted to outside. But he said you dare not turn around if somebody were inside of the barracks and talk to somebody inside of the barracks through a window. He said then you would be shot. Was that similar to you guys?
Never had that experience. Yeah. We were allowed to go in and out of the barracks freely,
mm-hmm.
Where we were at, without any problems.
What time did you have to get up in the morning? And did they have inspection and things like that?
Oh, they had. We had to have a roll call in the morning and in the evening.
What time in the morning?
You'd have to fall out. Seems to me it was around 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And you would come out of the barracks and line up.
Mm-hmm.
They would have spot roll calls every once in a while. You just come out and line up, and they,
mm-hmm.
you know, count you off, see if they count. And you'd have to stand there until the count, they got the count right, they
mm-hmm.
were satisfied with the count. And that was in the morning and the evenings.
So you had two counts, one in the morning and one in the evening?
Usually, yeah, with some in
between. What did you guys do in between time? Played
cards, read,
mm-hmm.
played ball. We did have some.
What kind of ball did you play?
We had basketball at one place. We had baseball equipment
mm-hmm.
and soccer balls. It was a big sport over there, soccer with the English
mm-hmm.
and the Canadians and the New Zealanders, Australians. So we play mostly baseball and soccer. And we were allowed to build a theater. They had an old barracks, and they allowed us to build a theater in mm-hmm. Dollars of six. And they had people that played instruments. The YMCA furnished most of our athletic equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And the Salvation Army was good about any clothes that we get our hands on, plus a lot of books, and the Red Cross. The Red Cross, of course, furnished food parcels. And you probably heard about the food parcel. Mm-hmm. That's what kept us alive.
How often did you guys get yours?
Well, that was never the same. A Red Cross food parcel was designed for one person for 1 week. But we would never get that many. We would get anywhere from an eighth to a fourth to a half a week, depending mm-hmm. upon whether the Germans wanted to give them to us or not. I'm sure that there were sufficient food parcels sent, but we never ended up with them. Sometimes we wouldn't get any. They'd say they couldn't get them through or something. Mm-hmm. So, most of the times what we would do, we had our own cooks. The Germans would furnish so much food, and then we would take some of the food from our Red Cross parcels and put it in the kitchen as a common.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would dole it out with the food that the Germans gave us, which wasn't very much.
What type of food would the Germans give?
Well, we would get an ordinary day. You would get in the morning, a cup of what we used to call Ersetz coffee. Was a coffee looked like coffee. It was made out of acorns, I think. It was a terrible tasting stuff. Yeah. And then a slice of bread, which was the old black bread that we used mm-hmm. to say made out of sawdust. And then for lunch, you would get a cup of something. And in the evening, you'd get another slice of bread and a cup of something else, either potatoes. Kohlrabi was a mainstay. We'd get kohlrabi
mm-hmm.
and boiled potatoes. A real treat, we would get it occasionally, would be I think it's oatmeal, barley. That was a real treat.
Yeah.
We got a cup of barley, man. We were in like fun.
How did the German guards treat you guys? Pretty good.
Most of the time, we had no trouble with them. Of course, they'd shoot you if you stepped over the warning wire
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. But most of the guards that we ran into, my whole experience in prison camp were one of two things. They were either elderly soldiers,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them were World War I veterans, or they were wounded in combat, and they were on light duty until
mm-hmm.
they were able to return to their units. So they were people that understood war. They weren't too nasty. We did run into one situation, and this was because of the combatant. When the camp we were in, we were chased out of there. I say chased out of there. We were cut off by land by the Russians. The Russians had penetrated south of us,
mm-hmm.
and the Germans were unable to take us out, evacuate us by land. So they eventually put us on an old coal barge and sent us down the Baltic Sea. And that was a horrible experience. It was about a 3-day trip in a hold with nothing to eat. And they were so crowded you couldn't even lay down to sleep.
Let's stop for one second. I got to get a couple dates here. You were at Stalag Route 6 in what month? Are we talking about February, March?
Let me see.
And how long were you at Stalag Route 6?
Well, I was captured in February of 1944, and by the time I got up to Stalag Route 6, it must have been in the March of 44.
Okay. And you stayed there for how long?
Refresh my memory.
Okay.
The reason I have an article.
Would you say that the Russians were coming from the south? Hi.
Hi.
The Russians were coming up from the south then at that time?
Well, they were coming from the north and from the east.
North from the east, okay.
And from Russia.
Okay.
And they had us cut out.
July 1944 now?
Uh-huh.
Okay, now this is when they started to move you guys out.
This is when they started to move us out.
Okay, because the Russians were coming.
The Russians were coming.
What, where did they take you to from there, did you say?
They took us by by ship, these old coal barges. By a ship to Stettin. That's in northern, and it's on the Baltic Sea, Germany. It's a seaport. And
S-T-A-T-I-N-E, Stettin?
Yes, I believe that's how you spell it.
Stettin, Germany.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And from there they took us, put us on trains. And this article, I'll give you a copy of this if you want to read it. You probably may have it already, but we were shackled together. They take your shoes and belts, you know, and they put you in these trains.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a train ride. It was, must have been overnight, and got to a town which is called Kiefheide.
Oh boy, still
keep K-I-E.
K-I-E.
F-E-H.
F-E-H.
E-I-D-E.
E-I-D-E.
Uh-huh. It's a small farming community. It's uh-huh. close to the Polish frontier. And we got into the station and got us off, and they gave us back our belts and shoes, but they handcuffed us two together.
Yeah, taking away your shoes at this time.
Yeah, when you're in the boxcar.
You're in the boxcar, your shoes.
Shoes and belts. But they gave us those back, and then we had what few belongings we had, and they shackled two of us together,
mm-hmm.
and they ran us, and they had these young Kriegsmarines, you know, young Marines, and with fixed bayonets and German police dogs, and they ran us from the station to the camp with these bayonets. They just were bayoneting the guys. Anybody that fell behind, they just bayoneted them in the back and the buttocks and legs, mm-hmm. and sick the dogs on them, and they ran us all the way to the camp. Now I don't know. Because we were so weak by that time, I don't know. It seemed like a long ways. It was probably a couple miles, but it was terrible. I don't know how many. They had 40 some out of our group they had to put in the hospital when we got to the camp. And Several guys died. I can't tell you how many because they wouldn't tell us. But it's it was done to every group that came into this camp. And they claimed that it was the commandant that was responsible because his family was supposedly bombed and killed. And so they... he did this with every group that came into that camp. Yeah, that is the only time that we were really mistreated. Mm-hmm. You know?
What Stalag are we talking about?
Now that's Stalag 4.
This is Stalag 4?
Right.
Okay. I'm just talking to a couple other guys that were in Stalag 4.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a Heidi Krug. It's HEYDEKRUG. So we misspelled that.
I'm sorry. How do you spell it? H E what?
H E Y.
H E Y.
D E.
D E.
K R U G.
K R U G.
Uh-huh.
Heidi Krug, Germany.
Right.
Okay. I was just talking to a guy the other day. A guy by the name of let me find it here. Matt Steller, he was in Youngstown. He was in Stalag Loop 4.
A bit darn.
How long were you in Stalag Loop 4?
Well, we moved, the Russians chased us out of there again.
You got chased out of here?
Yeah.
All right, so you were on that march then?
Yeah, that's what this is. Did he tell you about this?
The Heidi Krug run, this was, no, he didn't. This was for 89 days, is that what it was for?
Yeah, approximately. We were on the road for that long.
I'd like to get a copy of this if I could.
You can. I think I have another one. If you'd like, you can have
that
one.
Because I can take this to school and copy it and give it back to you.
I'm almost sure I have it. I think this is another one here. The Black March. Yeah.
Yeah, they call it the Black March.
Yeah,
okay.
That's the one.
Okay.
All right, let me see here. We were talking about the... that's not it.
How long did you say you were at Stalag Loop 4?
Well, so they chased us out of there. That's,
let me see. You got there... When did we establish that? In about July 1944?
July, yes. I was there until we started to march. I think it tells you in that...
the article? Okay.
Let me see that a minute. Should it tell you?
We'll put this thing on hold again.
We were in Stalag 4 from roughly from July of 1944 mm-hmm. until the end of the year. It was either December or early in January
okay.
when we started on our march, and we marched off and on for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
We were finally marched into the American lines, I was anyway, on April 26th of 1945.
Mm-hmm. Who, what outfit were you liberated by?
Second Army.
Second Army?
Yeah. Not with the white, blue, and white. It's a Second Army. It's a little town. I was liberated. A little town called Bitterfield.
Bitterfield.
B-I-T-T-E-R. F-I-E-L-D.
Okay. Bitterfield, Germany.
Uh huh.
What was the Black March like?
Well, it was. Pretty rough. By that time we were all lousy and we were marching and We weren't marching hard, but we'd cover, we'd march a whole full day. We'd get a break once in a while, and every time you got a break, you'd sit down and pull your clothes off and start killing the lice. At night, they would run you into usually a farm, or an old building or something, quite often a farm, and they would just we'd scrounge whatever food we could find on the farm. Over there, they bury their potatoes in the field. They just mound dirt over them. So we'd dig up potatoes, and most of our what we got to eat was boiled potatoes. If you were lucky enough, you could find a chicken or an egg, or some kohlrabi. But most of our diet was boiled potatoes, and we'd stay in different places. I remember one night they put us in an old train station, and it happened to be close by an army munitions dump, where I don't know if it was munitions or fuel, because the Allies bombed it that night. Everybody went scattering because they really, they hit a bullseye on it, and it was a big fire. But anyway, the reason that we didn't escape that night, it was so close that we decided that we were only safe if we stayed together in groups. And as a matter of fact, the next day, they turned us over and marched us into the American lines.
But so, the Germans didn't. Yeah. They actually marched you into the American
lines? Yeah, because they, you know, the guards didn't want any part of being captured by the Russians. So they had two choices, either Americans or Russians. So they chose naturally.
How were you treated by the guards while on the march?
On the march, it was, well, like I say, we started, we decided as a group when we started to march, we pretty well knew what the situation was. And we knew it was only a question of time. And we felt that the only way that we would be, the way we would be the safest was to stay together as a group. Now the guards were just marching along with us. You know, they had their guns, but we could have overpowered them at any time. It was a very interesting trip. You'd go march through these little towns, and when we first started, the people are out there booing and hissing, and we got closer to the American lines, it was almost like a celebration. The people were out there cheering.
Oh, really? Yeah. Figure they better play both sides of the fence.
Right. Yeah. The roads were all just jammed with people that were fleeing from the Russians. And you'd see horses laying along the ditch with a piece of meat cut out of it, and they were just jammed, running from the Russians. There's one thing that the Germans don't like, are the Russians. There's one thing the Russians don't like, it's the Germans. So. And we had in our, particularly in Stalag Group 6, that outside of our compound, they had a separate compound for the Russian prisoners. And they used the Russian prisoners to be the honey dippers and do the dirty work around the camp. And apparently they fed them next to nothing, because every once in a while you'd see them carrying a body out. They just didn't feed them. I went from 160 pounds. When I was liberated, I weighed about 120 pounds.
Oh, geez.
And it was tragic. The day we were marched into this little town, you know, everybody just scattered. There were Americans were stationed there. Some of the platoons had taken over homes, private homes. So we were walking down the street, and the guy happened to be a mess sergeant to call us in. And we went in, and he fixed us pork chops and potatoes and bread and butter. And And I got so sick, I thought I was going to die. In fact, we did lose several guys died from eating.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That night, the Army rounded us all up and put us in a school, and we were under guard. And we were under guard.
Under guard by our own troops?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
They didn't want us to eat.
They didn't want you to eat? Oh, yeah. I see. Okay.
See, because the whole outfit was so sick and terrible. Some guys died. Four or five out of our group died from eating.
Oh, jeez.
And they flew us from there to Halle, Germany, then to Nancy, France. And at Nancy, France, they had an old French garrison that had a big brick wall around it, big brick barracks.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in portable shower units, and you would go in, take a shower, you take your clothes off, and they throw them away. You take a shower and get dusted with lice powder and get new clothes until we got rid of the lice. And the only thing we had to eat for the first few days was eggnog, you know, powdered milk and powdered eggs. And then about a week later, they gave us a little piece of toast with nothing on it, and a few scrambled eggs, and gradually build us up so that we were eating. By the time I came home, we were eating more things.
Mm-hmm.
That was in, well, we got out of there in June, early part of June. They put us, they had set up these repatriate camps along the coast. They had Lucky Strike. I forget. Anyway, we were one of the first ones that we got on a boat and came home.
Mm-hmm. When did you get back to the States?
In June, sometime.
See, this other guy I talked to, I told you the other day, he went to Halle, Germany as well.
Uh-huh.
And he said he was liberated April the 26th, 1945, by the 104th Airborne.
No, it wasn't the Airborne. But
yours was the Second Army?
I thought it was the Second Army because it's that blue and white patch with crosses on it.
Well, that's okay, because there's 10,000 guys, remember, on this march, and his group may have. Well,
there were all kinds of splinters. See, there weren't more than a couple thousand guys.
Indeed may have been with the Second Army, and he may have been one splinter up the other end or whatever, and ran into the 104th.
Right.
All the time that you were a prisoner of war now, showers were few and far in between, so everybody had lice in them, is that right?
Except in the permanent camps, of course. We policed ourselves there, and if anybody came in with camp with lice, you know, they were encouraged to boil their clothes. And one time there was quite a lot, so what we did was the Germans gave us big kettles and some wood, and everybody had to take all their clothes off and boil all their clothes. Mm-hmm. And we did it all at one time. And so in the permanent camp, we were okay. In Stalag 6 and 4, we were okay most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But
were there showers at the time you guys could take a shower?
Yeah.
How often did you take a shower?
Oh, you know, once every week or so.
Oh, you could take a shower once a week?
It was cold water.
Mm-hmm.
And in the wintertime, it wasn't much fun.
I was going to ask you, while you guys were on the trip, that was one of the years that the Germany experienced one of the most coldest winters. It had to be colder than hell.
Sometimes it was terribly cold.
How deep was the snow and so forth?
Well, it varied. It wasn't. We didn't run into didn't run into a whole lot of deep snow. And then, it started getting warmed up. You know, by April.
How'd you keep warm, though? Did you have blankets with you, or what?
I had just a little thin blanket. I had a pretty good coat. When I was shot down, I had a summer leather flight jacket,
mm-hmm.
and a winter pants with the sheepskin inside,
mm-hmm.
and the sheepskin boots. Well, I lost one because one of them got caught on a plane. But I sold the pants to some Indian Gherkins,
mm-hmm.
for two loaves of bread, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I traded my leather flight jacket, and they're not warm at all,
mm-hmm.
to some Indians at another camp. And they gave me a cloth jacket, field jacket, army,
mm-hmm.
which is warm, and several loaves of bread to boots.
No, you made out
so I made out all right. I had a watch. I traded my watch for another watch and got some bread. But those Indians don't eat bread,
mm-hmm.
so they had bread to trade to buy things.
Ah, I see. Okay. Why don't they eat bread?
Well, their religion.
It's their religion.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to add at this time?
I can't think of too much. We were when we came home, we were given a 90-day furlough at home,
mm-hmm.
and we were to report down to Miami Beach to those hotels down there. So I did. But if you were married at the time, you could take your wife, and there were so many wives that went down there with the GIs that they chased all of us single guys out to San Antonio, Texas. So I was out there for a while, and I was discharged in October from...
October 45?
Yeah, 45, from San Antonio, Texas.
What was it like finally coming back home?
Great. It was nice on that furlough, though, 90-day furlough. It was pretty nice being mm-hmm. home in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Then, of course, while I was home, the war in Japan was over, so we knew it was just a formality going back in to be discharged because... Yeah, we had enough points to be discharged about six times.
Mm-hmm. So, I see.
Yeah, so, it's a matter of points.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, if you want, I can make a copy of this and send it back to you.
Billy, do I have another copy of that?
Uh-huh.
John J. Farrell.
Uh-huh.
He was on my original crew, and I didn't see him. So when I came home in 1946, I wrote him a letter. He lived in Brooklyn, New York.
Mm-hmm.
He had the whole accent and everything. And I wrote him a letter. Never heard from him. And about, when was that? About 4 or 5 years ago?
More than that.
About 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Millie got a call one night from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Guy by the name of John J. Farrell. He's retired and he lives in Florida. And the reason that he called me, he sold his home in Brooklyn. The people that bought the home in Brooklyn did some remodeling on his house and they came across in the wall, somehow, a letter from me. And they sent it to him. So he and his son, I guess they must have been drinking beer one night.
Yes, they were. And he got on
the phone and called, and a couple of days later he called back, and I talked to him. And that letter was in that wall
mm-hmm.
from 1946 until 5 years ago. Obviously, I didn't know how it got there, but it was there.
And that was the first time that he had read it.
Apparently.
Apparently.
Yeah.
So how in the heck did he get into a wall?
I don't know.
They were remodeling the house and tore down a wall,
And
that
was there, but they say, how did it get there in the first place?
Well, that's something, isn't it?
I don't know. May have been in one of those mailboxes or something. Yeah. But anyway, he and his son one time were going... he decided he didn't like Florida, so he bought a place in New Jersey.
Okay, for the record, this is the end of the tapes, now 12:25.